Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities, all you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you two, not in a creepy way.
Welcome, this is Eric. This is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2014 movie Interstellar, directed by Christopher Nolan and written by Christopher and Jonathan Nolan.
Yeah, man.
It's part of our Nolan universe deep dive. We're getting nearing the end, right?
Yeah, one more after this.
Wow. Okay, so
I mean, unless you're talking about release order, but
have we gone through every Nolan film now?
He had a really early one called The Following.
Yes,
that he did before Memento. I have it. I haven't seen it. I'm not sure if it's worth going back and checking out.
I've seen it. I after Memento, I watched it. I rented it on video, and I thought it was pretty good. I remember it being like out of chronological order in the same kind of way Memento was, without the tattoos and stuff.
Okay.
So, but I remember it being pretty good for like a low-budget movie, or indie movie maybe. Drew, as the Nolan expert, tell us about your experience with Interstellar.
Drew, tell us your Interstellar experience.
Yeah, do you know, I actually almost texted you, Jason, and said, hey, you want to take the lead on this one? Because I got maybe too many questions, but we'll see.
I was just going to say the third line of my notes. I wonder how long it will take Eric to make a 2001 equation to this film.
Not long.
Yeah, I figured.
So okay, so back to Drew.
Not,
Drew, you're in.
Not unjustified, but brother Drew.
Yeah, thank you for calling me our Nolan expert. I don't think that's earned, but I was the one who wanted to go through the filmography, so I'll take it.
That makes you the expert out of the three of us.
Yeah, of us, you're the expert.
Yeah, I had never seen Interstellar before this week.
Wow.
And so, Jason, are you the only one who had seen it?
I guess so. If neither of you had seen it, yeah, I've seen it before.
Okay. So anyway, so sorry.
This is my third time.
Oh, excellent.
Wow.
You will always win this. You will always have more time to watch than I will.
Yeah. I'm interested in going back and watching it again.
It will reward you greatly upon rewatch.
I can imagine. I actually didn't know much about this movie. I knew it had Matthew McConaughey, and I knew there was some space stuff, and that was it. So going through the movie, I went in as cold as you possibly can in this day and age, especially with a big movie like this. And I had a really, really good time watching this. I really enjoyed it. I didn't quite understand everything, but it's a movie that's made me think about it a lot after it's over. There are some 2001 parallels, except my memory of watching 2001 is the up your ass bullshit in the last part of the movie just didn't seem to go anywhere in 2001. And I was quite satisfied with the end of this movie, Interstellar.
Really?
I was.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see if you persuade me. So, Brother Jay, you'd seen this before. This is the third time?
Yep.
And you watched it with Mother Anderson, Father Anderson, and boyfriend Jesse?
That is correct. At the cabin.
Yeah, the cabin
so
in the
a
woods.
Remote snowy setting.
Yeah.
A remote snowy setting.
So you were figuratively like past the wormhole at a distant location from civilization.
We were stranded on a desolate planet.
And what did you think watching it this time?
I liked it. I the science-y stuff kind of bugs me a little bit. But on rewatch the third time, I understood a lot of what they were trying to yada yada to make work in the story. And if you go with that, then it flows together. So,
and what did Mom and Dad think?
This is the second time Mom and Dad have seen it.
Did they see it in a theater or something?
I'm not sure. I didn't get that far. But they both said that they thought they enjoyed it the first time, though they were very confused. But they both said they got more out of it this time, and it was a lot clearer, and they both liked it.
Oh. And what did boyfriend Jesse think? Well, he already said he had liked it. You remember liking it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that opinion didn't change?
Nope.
Okay.
And I'll hold off pending to see if he'll actually come down and share his words. Otherwise, I'll speak for him.
Okay.
What did you think, Eric?
When I realized I was watching Christopher Nolan's 2001, I was a little, maybe, wary, is my feeling about it. I was like, oh, no. This is going to be a three-hour-long, slow trudge through some science-y bullshit. Okay, it wasn't a bad movie, although it was a very long movie. But I thought the acting was good. I just don't think I buy how they worked it all out at the end. Like, I don't like the twist. And
what do you consider the twist?
I guess, well, when we get to the plot, I'll tell you about what I think is a twist.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe, perhaps I can't think on like the theoretical physics of it enough to go the whole way. But we will get there, definitely. But I thought it was a visually stunning film. It actually won an Academy Award for visual effects. It beat Captain America, Winter Soldier, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Guardians of the Galaxy, and X-Men Days of Thunder. But it lost in both production design and original score to The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Man, aww. Fuck that movie.
Yeah, this was again, 2014. It's recent, so yeah, there's lots of movies that, like, I think Birdman won the Best Picture, right? Yeah, this is a strong year for movies, and this was not an Oscar, a traditional Oscar winner kind of movie. It wasn't nominated in the top of anything but effects, really. So, are we ready for the plot?
I'll just say this. You know, I thought the spacey, sciencey stuff was cool and everything, but what really landed for me was the father daughter stuff. Even though at times it was pretty heavy handed, but I don't know, it really got me. And the scene towards the end with Ellen Burstyn in the hospital bed, it wrecked me.
Yeah,
that was really tough.
Well, that, you know, okay, so that was my initial reaction after the whole thing was over. It's like, I thought, well, this is a good movie, but this wasn't necessarily a fun movie.
No.
I mean, this wasn't a movie that had, I don't know. I guess I don't know what I was expecting. I was expecting a drama that would end with laughter and tears and cheering and whatever. But instead, I think I just felt uncomfortable for a lot of the interactions of this movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's really bleak.
Yeah.
Though, until the very end, it's really bleak.
I would argue it's very bleak all the way through the end. I mean, we'll have to see what Interstellar 2 does, but...
Interstellar 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Interstellar 2, hunting season.
Well, you know there is an Interstellar 2, right?
No, no. Is there?
There's a Russian movie that was released on YouTube about the same time. And it basically, if I remember the story, it's because Interstellar was the most pirated movie of the time. And people thought they were getting this movie on the YouTube for free. And so it was downloaded or viewed like a million times on YouTube. until I think the studio forced it down or whatever. But again, it was a Russian production. And then it had another resurgence when the same company released a low budget movie also called Interstellar 2. So it's all trickery. But this was kind of, I mean, this was kind of an art movie, although not nearly up its own ass like the 2001.
More or less up its own ass than in Inception?
Less, I think. I don't know. Brother Jay, what do you think? More or less?
Much less than Inception.
Okay, yeah.
Because the science that was in this wasn't, it was not made up as much as, I mean, it had some basis in theoretical science. And
a lot of it.
Yeah, they weren't just like bullshitting through it. Some of it was legitimate science.
No, they weren't bullshitting. So. They were tricking you. This was like The Prestige without the cosmic ending.
What makes you make that equation?
I'm going to go right to it with a plot here, okay?
Yeah. Let's just spoil the whole thing.
Yeah, no, we're going to spoil it, by the way. This is what we do, people. But I'll argue that, okay, so I might actually watch this movie again because it was so beautiful. But I don't think I'm going to expect to get anything more out of it. We'll see. We'll see what you guys do. You've convinced me on a lot of stuff before. As I mentioned in text messages, of the three of us, I am basically the corn farmer in this family. So we'll see what if you guys can science and engineer it up for me.
Well, I tilled me some okra.
Not anymore.
Nope.
So I think the... Because you now understand the progression of the movie, because you've seen it, the jumping around, and then the last 40 minutes of the movie will make more sense when you get there, so you can pay more attention to the details beforehand that lay the groundwork that pay off. When the first time you watch this, there's so much to absorb. I didn't get it. I mean, I had a hard time at the end of this movie the first time. I did not understand it until I watched it the second
time.
Again,
maybe that's where I am. So, but I mean, I appreciate the trick. But let's talk about the trick. So, okay. The plot opens with a group of elderly people. They're giving interviews about having lived in this climate of crop blight and a constant dust reminiscent of the Great Depression. And the first one we see is an elderly woman, Ellen Burstyn, from W., Red Dragon and The Exorcist.
Ellen Burstyn.
Did I call her Burstyn? What did I? Yeah, that isn't that how you spell her name?
No. Ellen Burstyn.
There is no N in the beginning?
No, like Burstyn from the seams.
Okay, all right. I could be, okay. Ellen Burstyn. Does sound like a porn name. Especially if you've seen Requiem for a Dream. Ellen.
Great movie.
Yeah. Ellen, I'm not going to see that again either.
She is not sexy in that movie.
Oh, no.
No one is sexy in that movie.
I mean, she's kind of sexy in The Exorcist, really. Anyway, so Ellen Burstyn from The Seams states that her father was a farmer, but didn't start out that way. And then the scene changes, and we're introduced to a farmer and a widower named Joe Cooper, played by Matthew McConaughey. We know him from Mud, Kubo and the Two Strings, Tropic Thunder, Tiptoes, U-571, and Contact.
He may actually be the most number one guest on our podcast.
You know what? After I realized last week that I, you know, stepped on it by mentioning somebody who had been on, three episodes, this movie is full of people we've talked to. And some of that is Christopher Nolan's fault because he hires a
Michael
lot of
Caine.
People. But... We'll talk about people who have been on our podcast a lot, and he is certainly one of them. So he is a college-educated former NASA test pilot and engineer who is forced to give up his occupation to farm. Living on a rundown farmhouse, presumably owned by his father-in-law, they farm corn, since wheat is no longer available, and okra, just now having become extinct due to blight. We don't see any animal life on these farms. And this is supposed to be in 2060s in eastern Colorado. More than half of the world's population has been decimated from famine, and America has
Is that ever actually established?
Probably not. I'm reading from IMDb's plot synopsis here.
All right.
America has been reduced to a struggling agrarian society for the past 30 years. Technology has come to a standstill for the past 40 or so years, and automobiles are no longer produced, and a computer laptop is a luxury item.
None of that is established in this movie.
No, there's some liberties with this, and I apologize for that. At a certain age, kids are tested to determine what occupations they will have to take to help humanity survive. In school, it's taught that the U.S. was that the U.S. going to the moon in 1969 was a hoax to drive the Soviet Union into bankruptcy and win the Cold War. A convenient conspiracy that people still believe.
I found that the concept of the corruption and retelling of history in times of crisis on an institutional basis, quite a chilling concept.
Yes, but not entirely unbelievable.
No, it was super believable. That's why it was so chilling.
Sure. Especially since we live in an era currently where truth seems more malleable than it did when we were younger.
No, to spoil some more, end of the movie when he returns and he says, "Oh, so you told him I loved being a farmer."
Yeah, well, that was cute, yes. Anyway, so Cooper's family consists of his 65-year-old father-in-law, Donald, played by John Lithgow, from The Accountant, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, 2010, The Year We Made Contact. His 15-year-old son, Tom, played by Timothy Chalamet, he is, by the way, the future Paul Atreides of Dune in pre-production.
Oh.
Yeah, I think he was also Call Me By Your Name or something.
Mm-hmm. And Lady Bird.
Yes. And then his 10-year-old daughter, Murph, played by Mackenzie Foy, who we know from The Conjuring and the Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn 1 and 2.
Nutcracker.
Yeah. So Donald was born at the end of the 20th or beginning of the 21st century, and he remembers technology changing, and he's our wistful connection with our own time in this story. And he gets along well with Cooper, and he kind of takes care of the duties, like household duties. And they sit on the porch and drink beer in the evening and you know, have their guy talk. Joe's son Tom is a boy of average intelligence, which now makes him a farmer. And his daughter Murph is feisty and highly intelligent. And they have a very close bond. And she is all interested in the science and space stuff. She also believes her room is haunted because books keep falling off of her shelves. And a model of the lunar lander gets knocked over and broken. The lunar lander that was part of the vast conspiracy. But anyway, they live a pretty simple life, and they attend a Major League Baseball game that we see.
Yeah, I didn't realize at first that was supposed to be like a Major League Baseball game.
Yeah, yep. That was like the Yankees or something, right?
I didn't see. They looked pretty rough.
But then this gigantic dust storm comes, and we see what Mother Nature has wrought. And we also see that something weird is going on in daughter Murph's room.
And something weird is going on with the computerized combines.
Oh, and there's a scene where they chase down a drone aircraft to steal its battery, right? Or, I guess it's processor.
I think both. It's solar cell and whatever computer is inside of it.
Yeah, because theoretically, it's been flying around unmonitored for years.
Like 40 years, right? It was Indian.
Yes.
They made a great point to call it that.
Oh, like Indian, like the country of India.
Yes.
Yes.
Ah. I had no idea. I remembered them saying it.
It was not an aboriginal drone.
Well, I didn't know it was a first person's thing. Or it came from, like, some sort of, like...
Sorry, I misspoke. It was an indigenous people's drone.
Yes. I would be, maybe because I'm not a corn farmer, I would find it super scary to drive a pickup truck into a cornfield.
Especially one where you have automated combines running around.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe there's not obstacles there on the cornfield. Maybe corn stalks are just bendy and you can drive through and it won't be a problem.
I'm pretty sure at 30 or 40 miles an hour, a completely unhulled stalk of corn would make a hole in your windshield. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's also freaky stuff in cornfields.
Yeah, like children.
Freaky redheaded children.
It's true.
Bruce Willis and Joseph Gordon-Levitt full of prosthetics.
Yep, sometimes weird
Kevin Costner.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You could run into a baseball game.
Shoeless Joe Jackson.
Oh, my God. Ghosts stuff. Oh, okay.
You heard about my cracked windshield?
I did not. On your rental? Is it covered by insurance?
Covered by my credit card.
Ah, good. Okay.
What cracked it?
It's okay. Kelly got her first chip, and it made a crack. She's none too happy about it.
Yeah. Nah. When I called the rental car company, they were like, nah, it happens all the time in Alaska because it's really cold and it's got auto start, so people blast the heat. And if there's one tiny little chip, then it becomes a crack. And they were like, what car did you use? I told them, like, oh, they cover it. Just call them and file a claim. And when you bring the car back, we'll contact them and we'll work it all out.
Cool.
So they said, check, you know, that's why you always check your benefits of your credit card when Excellent. You rent. I'm like, ooh.
Yeah, good deal. Anyway, by the way, Brother Jason, we haven't talked about it on the pod, but he rented an Expedition.
Not on purpose, but I had reserved a Ford Edge, which is a tiny little SUV, midsize. I think they call it
it's not tiny. It's bigger than an Explorer, I think, right?
Or
bigger than
an Edge is not. An Edge is like, it's like barely.
It's bigger than an Escape, but smaller than an Explorer. Because I don't think they make Escapes in like a V6.
And the Edge Escape, has a V6. Escape is a little bit bigger. Because your Escape has four doors and the Edge only has two doors.
Ah, okay. Well, I stand correct.
So, at least the websites. Anyway, I had reserved they called it a standard size SUV. Because my Toyota from another rental place was canceled. So I made a new reservation with another company, and for like $20 more for the 2 weeks I rented it, there was like, oh, you can have this standard SUV. So I'm like, okay. And when we showed up at the airport, they gave me two options of vehicle, and it was I think it's a Hyundai Santa Fe or a Ford Expedition. And I'm like, well, no brainer. It's a Ford Expedition. However, no one told me when it was Ford Expedition, because I've driven Dad's car, because when he bought it in Oregon, I drove it from the dealer to the airport to pick them up as a surprise. So I'm used to the new Expeditions. This, however, is not that. This is even bigger yet, because it's the Expedition Max.
And it is also the ugliest big SUV I've ever seen.
It's just a station wagon. It's a giant jacked up station wagon.
It totally looks like almost like a Ford Flex, like the the big station wagon they have, except like on steroids.
Yeah. It's got a whole bunch of things I don't like, so.
Yeah. I mean, it's very comfortable inside. I got to ride it last week, and it's
comfortable.
Plush.
It's a nice. The problem is you can't feel the road, and in Alaska on ice and snow, that's not really good. So that was disconcerting.
Well, especially since it's the size of a train.
Yeah. Yeah. But I was getting 24 miles to the gallon, so that was good.
I hate you.
Well, it also has that feature that if you stop for any length of time, the engine shuts off and comes back on. So that somehow helps with economy. But we drove it down to the cabin and back. We were averaging 24 miles to the gallon. So
that's awesome.
I'm not going to complain about it, especially because it's giant. It's a gigantic vehicle. But some of the controls I'm not real thrilled about. And the back window is useless and just cakes up with snow, even with the defroster and the rear wiper. So it's pointless. So we had to stop and clear the window more than once.
See, partly because the back window is like, 49 feet from the driver's seat. It's small anyway to see through.
Yeah, so.
Anyway, but okay, no, it's tangent.
It is a bus. It's an ugly bus.
Yeah. It's just so plain on the outside. That's the thing. It looks like a station wagon. The very front looks okay, and the back is very utilitarian, but both of the sides just have no design to them at all.
It's very blah. Thought
to it. Yeah. Okay. So,
driving through the cornfield, Indian probe.
Well, no, and so Murph's bedroom, she is taking notes on this ghost activity. Because she believes she is being haunted, and she thinks it's the ghost is speaking in Morse code. And as it turns out, after the big dust storm, and the dust happens to fall in very precise designs on the floor, Cooper figures out, it's not Morse, it's binary. There's like a message in there, and the message is a set of coordinates. So he's going to go to these coordinates,
And he figures out that it's gravity.
Yeah, it's some kind of gravitational anomaly. So this is an Aliens movie. That's what I'm talking about is the trick to this movie.
As soon as you hear gravity, you know there's going to be some time travel aspects to it, right?
Maybe, but definitely because it's somebody communicating, you're assuming that these are aliens, space aliens that are communicating.
But it may not be aliens except people in the future. So assuming it's aliens is denying the premise that there is a time travel element to this.
Okay, well, you were further than I was. I took this as a straight-up Aliens movie, being contacted by aliens, and then that's why I considered it a twist later when it is revealed that it may not be aliens. But anyway, we will get there presently.
The stay cemented that one for me.
That it wasn't aliens?
Yeah, when she said she deciphered the code and it said stay.
Oh, so did you guess already what was happening?
I thought it was him.
Oh, see? I did not know that. I should have, I suppose. But anyway, I was tending my okra, apparently. So, all right. So he ends up going to the coordinates, and she tags along or hides. She has a stowaway in his car. And they end up both going to this secret government laboratory.
That was a great seed for a really quick heartbreaking scene later.
Well, yeah. So they get there to the secret government laboratory, and he is apprehended and tasered into unconsciousness by a strange looking robot called TARS.
I love the robots. I love yes. TARS.
The robots are great.
You love the characters or the design?
Both. But TARS, the voice. The voice of TARS.
Yep.
I was convinced it was Matt Damon's voice.
Now, did you know Matt Damon was going to be in this movie?
No.
Okay.
No. I have a thing for voices, and I heard that. I was like, that's Matt Damon. I was positive. Turns out it's not, but it sounds exactly like him.
Who is it?
It is Bill Irwin from The Manchurian Candidate, 2004. And he's Mr. Noodle in the more recent Sesame Street episodes, because I think he's a mime by training.
I think he's also on the TV show Legion.
Yeah, no, he's been in a bunch of stuff, but that's where we would know him from more.
I never noticed before, but that you'd recognize him if you saw him.
Oh yeah, he's a very distinct Mr. Noodle look about him.
Yeah, he also has Matt Damon's voice, as it turns out. It was very confusing to me. I thought there was going to be some plot point where, was his name Miller? Was Damon's character's name Miller?
That was Dr. Mann.
Okay. Yeah, whoever Matt Damon was, I thought there was going to be some plot point where he was the one that originally programmed TARS.
Yeah, Dr. Mann.
But no, there's no connection there.
No, not at all. No, just similar voices. Yeah, so I didn't like the design of TARS and Case and whatever that third one was.
I think it started with an H. No? You didn't like him?
I mean, I got used to it.
I enjoyed that they were so different.
I don't know. I just saw them as like Minecraft character kind of things.
Well, but they interacted with the crews they were with, so they would have different personalities.
Yeah, that is some bullshit too. But we're
wait a minute.
The 2001 bullshit. I don't because I am distressful. I don't want any robot to not tell me the 100% truth or to have a wicked sense of humor. I guess you want it to be interactive if you are, I don't know, going through a wormhole and maybe by yourself for the rest of your entire life. I could see the reason for that. But I want my robot to be much like Siri. If Siri starts lying to me, I'm going to be very upset.
How would you know?
Yeah, that's the thing.
I mean, especially if you're trapped on the ship by yourself for like 20 years.
Yeah, robots have to, it's in the name. They are slaves. I do not want them to be. I don't want them to be independent, acting like some HAL bullshit. I am very resistant to that. Turns out, didn't realize how passionate I was about it.
Evidently.
Yeah. So, and I was a little bit waiting for the robot mutiny, but well, they didn't get there. So,
or the robot lockout.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I'm sorry. I can't let you in, Coop. We can't do that.
All right.
Anyway, we go to the secret government laboratory.
Kip was the third robot.
Kip. Okay. So we have, we meet NASA. We have Dr. John Brand, played by Michael Caine, from a bunch of Nolan movies, Children of Men and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. We have his beautiful young daughter, Amelia Brand, played by Anne Hathaway, from The Dark Knight Rises and Brokeback Mountain. And nobody's convinced that he has just discovered this place by accident. And Dr. Brand believes that a force brought Cooper here. The aliens told him to come. Why are you laughing?
Again, assuming aliens.
I am assuming it. They legitimately was aliens.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, that's what they thought, right? When they started talking about how the wormhole appeared.
Well, the question is that what they thought? Or is that what... Well, yeah, I guess, yes. Because the wormhole was created, right?
Yes.
That's what they're telling us. The wormhole was created.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know about that science either, but oh well. So, they explain, like, what's been happening. And... there's a space mission leaving soon to go through a wormhole to an unknown origin near Saturn that will take them to three potentially habitable planets. Two of them are orbiting a supermassive black hole named Gargantua.
Yeah, it was Gargantua, kind of like unobtainium.
Kind of, a little bit.
But if you get to pick the names for the places you're going to live, why would you pick like such a malevolent name?
Well, because, you know, black holes are scary, right?
It was probably named before they decided that's where they might end up living.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're going to name it something like New Eden or, I don't know, something.
Well,
Greenland. Okay.
So we learned that 10 years earlier, 12 Reykjavik. Astronauts were sent out through the wormhole in 12 different ships. And only three activated their thumbs up beacon saying that...
The Lazarus missions.
Yes. And they don't have anybody to pilot the spacecraft. And so when Cooper shows up as a former NASA pilot, it's perfect. It's almost like destiny. Or almost like the aliens picked him.
And they also talk about plan A, plan B. Were you able to wrap your head around that?
Plan A was that the entire space station, or sorry, NASA facility they're in, was actually a big centrifuge so that they can maintain some sort of gravity. But once they figured out the gravity equation and can lift this big old space station up off the Earth, they could save humanity that way, or a big bunch of humanity that way.
Well, they could get the space station to the wormhole.
Yeah, so plan A was they needed to figure out how to like temporarily turn off gravity. So they could leave Earth?
Because getting out of Earth's atmosphere is very, very expensive.
Yeah, that's all the fuel. Because once you're outside the atmosphere, then there's almost no fuel needed for maneuvering.
Yeah. But turns out it's a pretty serious problem. Like even today with the space elevator ideas and stuff.
Yep. Still
very difficult. So anyway, plan B then is to do the seeding thing where they send out, you know, basically... the future generation, where they can go and find a planet and just start life over again.
By embryos.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they're starting a brand new Earth from scratch, but not saving anybody on the dying Earth.
Nope.
And Cooper is kind of fond of the dying Earth because his family lives there.
Well, the sole reason he went was to potentially save his family. Because the professor kind of told him, if you don't go, then we have to go with plan B, but plan A has, you know, possibility, and we think you're our best hope, Obi-Wan.
So they flatter him into it. His daughter is not happy that he accepted this mission because he's leaving her.
Yeah, and he he makes the mistake of trying to calm her down by appealing to her her science mind and tell her how cool it is that he might be experiencing gravitational time dilation so that when he comes back that they might be the same age, which freaks her out because then she realizes that he's going to be gone for at least 25 years of their time.
And so that would, you know, she's 10. She doesn't have a sense of like saving the world. She wants her dad. Yeah.
That was rough.
Yeah, again. And if, especially when she's figured out the Morse code, she says, it is Morse code, and it actually says, stay.
Mm-hmm.
but he doesn't believe in ghosts anyway, and these are space aliens, so who knows what that means, and maybe she's just making shit up because she's 10 and wants to persuade him, and turns out kids are kind of manipulative like that. Quick tangent. So a couple days ago, I took a nap like in the afternoon, which is not super common, but I should have taken like a 20-minute or a half an hour nap or whatever, but instead I was asleep for probably like an hour and a half, and I could hear my family doing stuff in the other room, and I realized I should get up and help them with other stuff, or just, I don't know, not be a bum and lay in bed at 4:30 in the afternoon. But it wasn't a scary kind of sleep paralysis, but it's one of those things where, oh, I was not getting up. Like, I wanted to get up, but I could not physically like move my body to get up. I had to wake up further to do that. So I explained this to Kelly, and then Journey heard this, and she's like, that's what happens to me every morning when before we go to school. That's why I don't get out of bed soon. which is either, stunning, and so I shouldn't yell at her for not being able to get out of bed quickly, or it was just grasping on a convenient excuse for not getting out of bed when it's time to get out. Mm-hmm. Either way, I thought it was kind of fun. So Murph and, Cooper and his son and his father-in-law, you know, they have the normal guy thing where, you know, it's the hugging and hitting or whatever, or handshakes and salutes or whatever to leave. But Murph is pouting and doesn't want to talk to him. And then he is already leaving by the time she runs out of the house to actually maybe say goodbye to him. So that's kind of sad.
Yeah. And he has that heartbreaking moment when he's driving away and he looks under the blanket in his truck.
Yeah.
Which is where she had been hiding before when he was going to go look for the coordinates. And that was like a little gut punch grenade, because it took me a second to realize what he was doing.
It's pretty sad.
Yeah, this whole part of the movie hit me really hard.
And then we get into, like, again, this movie's in phases, so it's much like 2001. Because now we get into the space travel kind of part of this movie, where we meet, we see again, of course, the crew is Cooper, and then Catwoman. And then there's Dr. Doyle, played by Wes Bentley from American Beauty. Dr. Nikolai Romilly, played by David Gyasi from Annihilation and Dark Knight Rises. We have the TARS computer, played by Bill Irwin, we talked about. And the CASE computer, voiced by Josh Stewart, Dark Knight Rises. By the way, these robots, TARS and CASE, they were actually puppets that were controlled by like puppeteers, and then the puppeteers were digitally scrubbed out of the thing, so the movements were okay. I just didn't like the fact that they look like Minecraft characters. It's an aesthetic thing.
I have no familiarity with Minecraft, so that didn't bother me at all.
Oh, there you go.
They seemed very functional, like the way they slid into the middle of the spaceships to be like a display console. And then when they have to go fast, they are badass.
Well, maybe in that way, they're the same as the 2018 Ford Expedition. They don't look like much. Kind of plain, but they can move.
Yeah. That seemed like something that, you know, the military would build. Very, very functional, not really aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah.
Very utilitarian.
Well,
okay. Very, very customizable, very deployable. Mm-hmm. Infinitely variable.
All right. Now, I didn't, you know, okay, I don't need the Robbie the Robot, you know, from The Lost World or from Lost in Space. I don't need that kind of robot. I don't even see 3PO. But, I don't know. This just seems very, very stark. Like, a brutalist is his design. I don't actually know what brutalist architecture is, but I'm guessing it's like that. So, okay.
I was assuming you just made that up. It sounded cool.
It's actually an architectural thing. Yeah. Anyway. Oh. So
learn something new.
Yeah, I don't know if I used it right. So we've got the whole liftoff, blah blah blah, some space stuff. They there's some bickering inside the aircraft. So they're going on a 2-year journey to Saturn, and they wrap themselves up and go into cryosleep, where cryosleep is kind of fun. It involves wet.
They're sous vide.
Yeah, pretty much. In the meantime, Dr. Brand drives Cooper's old 2010 Dodge Ram truck back to the homestead. and gives a tape-recorded message from Cooper to his family. And Murph appears thinking maybe her father's home. That's kind of sad.
Mm-hmm.
But then storms back in the house. By the way, later, Murph is played by Jessica Chastain. And any movie that includes Jessica Chastain and a storm brewing already sets me on edge. But we will get there.
Yeah, even the house looks similar.
Yeah. So 2 years later, the Endurance is orbiting Saturn. Cooper's out of cryosleep, and he's reviewing messages. And his son tells him he's doing okay, and Donald says hi, and tells him that Murph still refuses to talk to him. So she holds this grudge like only a young girl can. Or maybe a child. Maybe it's not a girl thing, but yeah. Then we have the Endurance approaching the wormhole, and we have the whole thing where there's three planets, and they're going to take this rough ride, and they're going to set their first mission into Miller's planet, because that's the one with the most data sent, right? Is that pretty much like only three of the 12 sent out data, and the one that seemed to be have the most...
I thought that was just the closest one.
No, maybe.
Well, I think they were equidistant, the pretty much the same, but they only had fuel for one.
Oh, they only had fuel for one after the water planet.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. They had fuel to go to at least a couple, but there was an issue, so.
Oh, it was a time issue.
Well, yeah, that too.
It became a time issue.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyway, so they go to the Miller's planet, and we have this wormhole effect that was very much like 2001, on purpose, by the way. They intended it to look like 2001. They had, you know, I'm sure they had meetings on design of going through a wormhole, that kind of thing. So anyway, they find themselves in a region of space 10 billion light years from Earth. And they decide to go to Miller's planet just to stop there briefly, I guess, as since it's close to Gargantua, but it causes this gravitational time dilation. So going down to that planet is each hour spent on the surface costs 7 Earth years.
That's relativity.
Yeah. Yep. So they're already going to experience relativity because they went through the wormhole, but now that's really going to be an issue. So Romilly stays on board and is going to get data from the black hole where Cooper, Amelia, and Doyle, and then the robot Case go down onto the planet's surface to find Miller and chit-chat about what's going on Miller's planet. So they land on Miller's planet, which is a planet of water. Not deep water necessarily, at least where they land. But this is where the time dilation... I mean, I thought they did this part of it really well. Because kind of summing up their time on the planet, all this data or whatever they got from the planet was like sent fairly immediately and ended up being sort of a loop, right? It wasn't broadcasting continuously. It broadcast once. And because of the time dilation, it seemed like it had been broadcasting for a long time. Like, theoretically, they mm-hmm. got there just after Miller landed and probably died.
Yes.
Yeah. So, which, by the way, they make a point in the trivia that... So, Doyle ends up drowning. Or... We assume he drowned. But, theoretically, using the time dilation... They could have actually sent a rescue mission from Earth to save him. Because if they sent another mission from Earth at the same time, accounting for the time dilation, if it took them 50 years or whatever, 20 years to get there, they still would arrive only just... I mean, he could still be theoretically alive.
I mean, I buy that they could get there pretty quickly, relatively. But I don't know. It looked to me like he was crushed by the wave.
Yeah. Yeah. The wave was formidable. So it was bad news.
It was just a planet of waves.
Yeah. And I thought the special effects were pretty good. I mean, it was fine. I'm sorry. It's more than fine. It was stunning. It was probably amazing to see in the theater.
Yeah. I actually had that thought when I was watching it. I wish I had seen this in the theater. I can't imagine how disorienting that would have been in an IMAX.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So they finally get back to the Endurance after this tidal wave thing, whatever.
Yeah, because the tidal wave damages their ship, and they have to spend like an extra hour and a half down there.
Yes. Which means by the time they get back, just get back to their own ship. 23 years have passed for Romilly, who's still aboard their craft orbiting this water planet. And he has put himself to cryosleep a couple times, but, you know.
He seemed amazingly well-adjusted.
Yeah, he seemed pretty with it for having been alone.
I think I would have been pretty pissed.
Exactly.
I think you would have gotten past pissed at that point. You would have just been zen after, you know, 10 years, 15. You think you would just get more and more angry?
I think I would, yeah.
No, you'd be grateful when they came back. You'd be relieved. It wouldn't be some weird Stephen King fever dream.
They meet somebody who's even more pissed here coming up. But first, it's more tragedy. Because they get back to the ship, and the first thing they do is Cooper starts to review these 23 years of messages that have been piling up while he's been gone.
Oops.
And it's actually kind of tragic. First, we see a 17-year-old Tom showing a picture of what he believes is the right girl for him. And then we see older Tom, now played by Casey Affleck, who we know from Ocean's 11, Good Will Hunting, and
Matt Damon.
And he introduces Cooper to his grandson, Jesse. Now, then the next video, Tom is 40 years old and says that Donald died a week ago and is buried next to Jesse.
It's brutal.
Yes. And he is sending a message saying, okay, this is my final message because obviously you're not contacting us. So you are gone. You're not coming back. And this is it. I'm making peace. And then there's a thing from Murph, played by Jessica Chastain, who is really unhappy at her father still.
And he's just piling on.
Yeah. And it's very upsetting because she's bitter because now he would be the same age she is.
Well, and he said when he left that he would be back when she was about his age.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are a couple times in the movie where she asked in a couple different ways, you know, were you lying? Did you know you were leaving me for good?
Yes.
And yeah, every time, every different way she does it, it's brutal and affecting.
And that's, I mean, I think that's a credit to both Jessica Chastain and Matthew McConaughey. Because Matthew McConaughey he looks like grief stricken a lot in this movie. And it works.
Mm-hmm.
And he can't communicate through the wormhole, right? Or can he?
I didn't follow. Yeah, they couldn't get messages out. I couldn't follow why.
Yeah.
But they could receive them.
But now we have a little transition here where now we're back on Earth after Murph has stopped this recording. So we get to see what her life is like now. And it turns out she may be a bitter, youngish woman. But she has a job she likes. She works for NASA. She's Dr. Brand's assistant or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Brand is 90 years old and confined to a wheelchair. And he's still trying to solve this gravity equation to get their plan A rolling so they can save people. And he's kind of wistful about how his greatest fear is that Cooper will come back and they won't have solved the gravitation problem. So, it will, you know, that would be a bad thing. So the next step, now they go back to the Endurance and we see that they're debating which other planet to go to because they can't visit both. So they're going to visit Man's planet or Edmund's planet. And Brand wants to visit Edmund's planet because he appears to have the better prospect. But Cooper wants to visit Man's because he's still transmitting on his beacon. But also, Cooper has figured out that Brand, she's in love with Edmund.
Brown chicken, brown cow.
She just wants to go and be with her crush, which, you know, I mean, they have the back and forth where,
hey, if you got to repopulate the species.
Well, yeah. And, you know, he has a family. She doesn't. So this is as close as she was ever have to a family, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but he's the captain.
He was a real dick to her about it.
Yeah. Back on Earth, Murph returns to the Cooper homestead with her brother, Tom, who is a farmer, of course. And he just torched a bunch of his crop because of the blight. And they think that the farm eventually won't produce anything. But she has dinner with...
like, within a couple years, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so this whole thing is going bad. It's Earth is dying. So, she ends up having dinner with Tom, his wife Lois, played by Leah Cairns, and their son Coop. And Coop has a bad cough. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, Murph wants to maybe help, like, the family and maybe get some tests done or doing something, or maybe even, I don't know, have them live underground or whatever. But Tom wants no part of it. He's a farmer. So Murph goes back to NASA and learns that Dr. Brand is dying. And he confesses on his deathbed that Plan A was a lie.
The cake is a lie.
He wasn't going to get, he wasn't solving gravity to get people off of Earth. He just wanted to trick Cooper into piloting this mission because they needed a pilot. And also he wanted to promote Plan A because what are you going to do with a bunch of people on a dying planet except put them to work? Because if he didn't have a Plan A, then what's the point?
Well, nobody would be motivated to help and there would be chaos and everybody would want to evacuate.
Yeah.
Nobody would contribute to the well-being of the whole because they would see no point in it.
So Plan A,
because most people aren't that altruistic.
Gigantic deception. And Murph sends a message informing Amelia of her father's death. And she is also bitter and wants to know whether Amelia knows that it was all a lie.
And then, well, she also accuses her father of knowing.
Yes.
And leaving her to die and suffocate. Yeah. Starve and suffocate. On Earth.
Yes. Which is, I mean, it's just a sharpening of her 10-year-old point.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then the Endurance end up making it to Man's planet. And we learn that Dr. Man is Matt Damon, who could science the shit out of potatoes in a later movie, but he didn't do so well on this planet this time.
As it turns out, no.
Yeah. His planet was the ice planet. Not habitable at all.
It looked really cool, though.
Oh, yeah.
The ice clouds?
Yeah, the ice clouds were amazing, yes. And the whole, I think they actually were in Iceland and Anne Hathaway got like frost. No, the Iceland part of it may actually have been the water planet. But anyway, there was hypothermia in Anne Hathaway's real life because of this movie. So we know Matt Damon, by the way, from Contagion, Good Will Hunting, Ocean's 11, Talent of Mr. Ripley, and Dogma and Rounder. So he actually might be the...
Not in a creepy way MVP?
Maybe, yeah. He's been in cryosleep for 35 years, and he's relieved that he's being rescued, and he tells a story about how this frigid but beautiful world, it's 80% of Earth's gravity, and the lower part is livable, and maybe has a source of fresh water. You know, you got to get down below the big ice sheets and stuff.
And presumably, he couldn't move his station once he landed?
I guess. So, Bran sees the video Murph sent about her father dying and Plan A being a sham. And she's shocked and has no idea, but Man tells her the equation was actually solved long ago and determined to be impossible before anybody went on the mission. The only way they could ever actually solve the problem would be to get inside the black hole, which is impossible because you can't get inside a black hole.
Yeah, they solved the gravity component of the equation, but they never considered the time component of the equation because gravity and time are related. And they didn't have the data necessary to solve the time part. Which is what, was it Tars or Romilly suggested that they could get that data if they sent a probe into the black hole?
I think it was Romilly, yeah.
Yeah.
And they could just dip into the black hole and get enough data out.
Because somehow it wasn't a very powerful, it was just a minutely powerful force.
Yeah, if they could just skate along the edge of the event horizon, they could get enough data to get something, or they could get the maximum possible data they could ever get transmitted out. Because the idea is once you go in past the event horizon, nothing gets out.
Mm-hmm.
But back on Earth, we have more characters we meet, including... This described as Murph and her boyfriend, Dr. Getty. Is that her boyfriend?
Oh, I never got that.
I never got that either. But he's Topher Grace, we know from Ocean's 11. And we get to see that Earth is really not doing so well. And, you know, because the farms are all failing and people are trying to move around. It's a very Dust Bowl 1930s kind of thing. And she actually ends up going back to the farm and wanting to go to her room to... visit with the ghost or whatever.
Mm-hmm. She has a hunch that the information is there so that she can solve the rest of the equation.
She's being fed the information by the aliens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because the aliens have a plan. The aliens want to save the Earth or the people or something.
Because they like us. They're crunchy.
Back on man's planet, now we have two things happening at once. We have man showing Cooper the icy and forbidding world of man's planet, and we have Murph getting back to the Cooper homestead with Dr. Getty to examine Tom's son. And Tom's son, Tom doesn't want any of this people mess around with his family, blah, blah, blah. And then Dr. Man pulls off Cooper's voice beacon and tries to push Cooper off a cliff. Because Dr. Man turns out he's been plotting. This was not a habitable planet. He just wanted to make it seem so somebody would come visit him. Had he broadcast a message saying, oh, this is an ice planet, this isn't going to be good, that would be the last time he talked to Dr. Man.
Mm-hmm.
So he actually, again, this is a movie about betrayal.
He didn't really embrace the suicide part of the suicide mission.
Exactly, yes. And so we have the fight along the ice planet. The hand-to-hand fisticuffs. I guess all fisticuffs are hand-to-hand. So the fist part of the fisticuffs. I don't know how this works. Okay, back on Earth, Tom is outraged. So Dr. Getty is like, you need to get these people out because, you know, like, you can't live on the farm. You will die on the farm. Tom is not happy with that. So Murph confronts Tom that her father never meant to save them, but escape and leave it up to her. And Tom refuses and tells her to leave, believing it's his duty to take care of the farm to fulfill his promise to his father. And man is trying to kill Cooper by breaking his helmet, allowing the ammonia rich air to suffocate him. But, you know, last minute saving, Dr. Man tries to, you know, steals the landing craft or whatever.
Romilly's killed in a booby trap.
Yes. Yeah, Romilly had come down there to try to get information from Kip. And It was all booby-trapped. So the idea was man was getting the hell off that rock. He didn't care who he left behind. Then we have the scene where man is trying to get up to the Endurance, and there's a lot of spinning.
Well, not yet. There's no spinning yet.
Well, there eventually becomes spinning because...
Because he has a very 2001 scene trying to dock.
Yes.
Yeah, worst part of this movie. This was the worst part of this movie.
Yeah.
And it took a long time. This is a long time.
I mean, it was thrilling. It was harrowing.
It was unnecessary.
They
should have just had him blow up.
Yeah. I mean, they needed to create stakes for why Coop would send himself into the black hole.
Yeah.
But yeah, they didn't need the whole docking thing.
They could have just had him blow up at the dock, and that would have been sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. And this would have been a disconcerting thing to see in an IMAX theater.
Yes.
By the way, do you know why this movie is 167 minutes long?
No.
Because that's the maximum length of a movie that could be played in an IMAX camera. Yeah. Literally, they had to shrink the end credits.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's funny.
So...
That's an odd limitation.
Well,
you think with digital they would be able to get around that, but guess not.
You would think, well, but isn't the idea, isn't it really a 70 millimeter print?
Intermission.
Yeah, good question. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So the only survivors we have of this docking thing is we've got
Adam and Eve,
sort of, and they need to.
The Endurance is damaged, and their only hope is to try and limp over to Edmund's planet.
Exactly, yes. Which is where Eve wanted to go anyway. But there's a ticking clock because Endurance isn't just limping, it's getting drawn into Gargantua. So they have to get out of that.
Every space movie worth its salt has a line in it where it says... We're going to use the gravity to slingshot.
Yes.
And this movie is no exception.
Well, it's, you know, they use gravity to slingshot all sorts of real stuff, right? So,
I mean, yeah. And the new Mars mission.
Well, if Mars missions, if the Voyager missions, if they were all real and not just a conspiracy.
Not just propaganda to bankrupt Elon Musk.
Exactly, yes. By the way, did you see Elon Musk's presentation of his tunnel?
No.
Like the first part of his, he wants to have like underneath LA, he wants to have a tunnel that has only self-driving vehicles. It's not quite his Hyperloop idea, but it's a way he can have more efficiently. It would be more efficient to have self-propelled vehicles than it would be to, and a lot cheaper, like 10% the cost than to create an actual subway. So he did, like, I can't remember how many miles this tunnel is, under, like, Riverside, California. And unfortunately, instead of seeing, like, this whiz-bang technology, what they got to see is a Tesla drive along, like, a cement path underground at about 55 miles an hour or less, piloted by an actual person, not self-driving, and they had a bumpy ride. And he had to explain that, oh, yeah, it'll be all, you know, this is our test tunnel, so it'll be all super smooth later. But this way, it's like chitty, chitty, bang, bang.
It'll be super smooth in California that is an active quake zone.
Well, that's another whole other problem. But even they because it's our test tunnel, I guess they didn't invest in, I don't know, making it super smooth so it would be a clean, sleek ride.
Eh, why bother?
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know.
He could spend that movie on pot, or spend that money on pot.
Yeah, well, I hope that that the Boring Company made a lot of money on their flamethrowers last Christmas, because that's what funded part of his tunnel. Yeah, that pot thing is going to get in the way, for sure. It was a bad move on Mr. Musk. Weirdo, anyway.
Evil genius.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't know, evil, but weirdo genius. I suppose. But he definitely has a definitely evil genius name. Elon Musk? Come on.
He's a Bond villain.
He is, totally. Yeah.
If his middle name is four letters, too, we're all in trouble.
Elon Mark Musk?
I was going to go with Eric.
There we go.
Drew.
Drew, exactly.
Dick.
Bro J.
Bro J.
Bro J Simpson, man.
Oh, Bro J is a great name. So, blah, blah, blah. In order for Amelia and Cooper to leave and to get out of Endurance, to get Endurance out of the black hole, they have to use all the fuel from their little landing craft thingies. And turns out...
Did you say Amelia?
Is her name, or what is her real name?
I don't know. I only heard Brand ever.
Yeah, it's Amelia.
Of course it's Amelia.
Of course. You know, there's a lot of things like that in this movie. Anyway, so in order to save her, he has to sacrifice himself.
They have to jettison Mass.
Yes. And he is Mass. And he has to pilot one of the landing craft things. So he just detaches himself as if it were a stage in a rocket. And, oh, by the way, he's gonna go into the black hole anyway, because he can't escape, and he'll collect the data if he can. So this is where it gets even more 2001-y. So Cooper descends into the black hole, and somehow... Well, okay, you guys explain this one to me. It involves, like, fifth dimension Tesseract stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow... There is some entity, force, not necessarily alien, could be people from the future, by the way, because this fifth dimension is the element, the dimension of time. So,
time is the fourth dimension.
Yeah.
Sorry. So, the fifth dimension is...
That's the dimension that, like, houses the four other dimensions.
If you look up, you can actually see a Tesseract, like an animation of what a Tesseract might behave like, and it kind of broke my brain. It's like a cube that folds in on itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know how we got from there into being like the people under the stairs behind the walls guy.
Well, I think the premise was that when he ended up in the where he was, they put him into the fifth dimension.
Like they saved him from the black hole.
Mm-hmm. They plucked him out.
Lodged him in this Tesseract.
Because didn't Tars say that?
Yeah, they. It called them they.
Okay, so there is aliens.
Well, they're not necessarily aliens.
Well, Coop has the epiphany that it's actually them. The they is people.
Humans. In the future.
Okay, so the future people save him. So then he is now back in time. He goes through time, and he's the one that touches Amelia's fingers when they go through the wormhole.
He's the only one that has the ability in that dimension to make a bridge in communication with somebody in the past that will be able to transcend the instructions forward, because the people in the future don't have any meaningful way to transmit in a way that they could get somebody to acknowledge and or understand.
He is a goddamn space baby.
He's a translator.
Yeah. He's kind of the...
So he's stuck as being a translator?
Kind of, yeah.
For eternity.
No, until the problem gets solved.
He's in the fifth dimension, so it's independent of time, right?
Okay, yeah. So he and Tars, because if he was stuck there by himself, he would be no use to anybody, because he's got to translate GPS coordinates into binary.
He also wouldn't have the data, because Tars collected the quantum data that they needed.
Okay. So he then transmits the message, including a message to himself to stay. Not to his daughter, to himself. On behalf of his daughter. But
I think he does a good job acting in this, because it doesn't come to him right away. He's freaking out, and he's trying to change time. Right? That's why he taps out stay.
But isn't that a paradox?
It would be if he changed time, but he didn't.
Okay. So instead, he ruins his daughter's life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he ruins her life to save her so she has a life.
Yeah, so he ends up sending her the solution to the gravitational issue through the watch, right?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Solves all the problems.
Yeah. So the only way they can communicate from the fifth dimension is using gravity.
Now, isn't the fifth dimension the up and away in my beautiful balloon?
Nicely done.
Yeah.
No, I'm just pointing that out here. So, adult Murph solves the equation. And by solving the equation, and this is maybe where I am, I lost the plot a little bit. How does Cooper get back? And are they on, like, is Earth gone? I mean, have they basically solved the gravitational issue? And they are on this simulation in the...
They're on their space station.
Okay. All right.
And somehow, ostensibly, what I got from it is that either they plucked him out of the fifth dimension and deposited him in the path or the wormhole or the vessel passed by in a spot where they were able to pluck him.
Yeah, so when he was done in the Tesseract, they kind of tossed him back through the wormhole. And that's when he saw Brand from before and kind of shook her hand. Yeah, so they tossed him back through the wormhole. So he was floating out by Saturn.
Okay.
Many, many years later, because he was so deep in the wormhole that another few decades passed, right?
Yep.
So he basically just showed up outside Saturn, and luckily there were people there to find him.
Hello, honey.
Yes.
So he washed up on the shore, kind of.
Either that, or he died in, or is still in the black hole, and everything else is a fantasy.
Space baby.
I'm actually okay either way. I thought it was a satisfying ending.
Yeah, and this is where I kind of found an unsatisfying ending, because it was a goddamn 2001 ending. Like, we don't really know what's going on. We don't know if anything is real. It's all a lie. The movie's already told us everything is a lie. They're not fucking space aliens. It's supposed to be from the future. Except I mean, there are space aliens, right? I mean, something's happening.
No, not necessarily aliens. They are the future people. That's what I believe.
No. The people that saved the people that he ended up in a tesseract that ended up closing. And he was rescued by Joaquin Phoenix in a tinfoil hat. That's what happened. Or not. Mel Gibson called him a dirty Jew, and then it was all it was problematic.
I think we saw different movies.
Okay, so the Space Rangers found him, and he ends up in a hospital, and he's happy to hear that Plan A actually did work out. Gravity was solved. Mm-hmm. The centrifuge that was in there is now actually sustaining human life, blah, blah, blah.
His house is a museum.
His house is a museum. He can go and unsatisfyingly drink his beer on the porch because it's not dusty, so it's, you know, no, who wants to look
at it? It looked really cool with, you know, the gravity going up all sides, so.
Yeah, it did. I agree. No, this movie was visually stunning.
Mm-hmm.
But he sees his daughter. He sees Murph.
Exactly. He actually, Murph arranges to see him, right?
Yeah, she was in cryosleep. She was sous vide.
Exactly.
She is the savior of humanity.
Yeah, in fact, he was on, what, like Cooper Station or something?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he seems flattered that they named a station after him, and the people are like laughing at him like, well, okay, old man.
Not so much you, but your daughter.
Yeah, I mean, you did a good job too, but...
Sure.
Yeah, you just played with a watch, dude.
And this is where we see, again, Murph played again by Ellen Burstyn. No, Anne.
Correct.
My notes are correct on this section of my notes and not in the first part. Burstyn at the seams. Sassy, sexy, XXX, Ellen Burstyn.
I would have nominated her for an Oscar just for the look she gave McConaughey when he walked in the room.
Yeah, except that isn't it kind of like tragic?
Because absolutely.
She wants to see him, and he wants to see her, except that once she sees him and says, hey, it all worked out, now leave me with my real family. Because I've got all these people you've never met before, and they need me, and you're still all alone now. You're the one who chose to leave. Now, choke on it. Now, that's not what you said. It's very touching and everything.
Wow. Someone's got some issues.
Oh, no, I mean, he's still all alone now. I mean, she basically dismisses him right away. Like, he's not going to sit there and they're not going to chit-chat about old times. You're like, no.
Well, because she's going to die.
Well, exactly. Yeah. I don't want you to see me die. That would
and
be
he's out of he's out of time.
He's displaced.
Sorry, he's displaced, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So instead, he is going to steal an aircraft from the space orders.
Wait, let's just take a step back here.
Okay.
You and I took different things from the scene. She is going to die. She should have already died. She should not have survived the trip. But she hung on and was able to realize a lifelong wish to see her father one last time.
Yeah, that's very touching.
But for him, he is still a youngish man. And he expects to have some sort of meaningful time with his daughter and some sort of resolution. But there is no resolution for him.
Except she's going to die and he doesn't know when and he doesn't know anybody else. So he's related by blood, but he doesn't have any history with them.
Oh, it's the most uncomfortable wedding he's attending. Well, in this case, a wake. But
yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't know anybody. Or the songs they're playing, that the band is playing.
Wake reminded me of something, so okay. I'll tell you after.
Oh, no. Is this bad news?
No.
Okay,
Because you are the bad news brother.
Exactly. He's Bro J, the bad news brother. I can logo. We can have the logo right there.
Great.
Yeah.
All right, good. I implore you.
I'm the okra farmer.
I'm the bad news deliverer.
Yeah, and Drew's surrounded by imaginary lines.
I'm going to say Drew's tars.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which one of those comments is more insulting.
So Cooper, luckily it's dealer's choice. So Cooper has to let his daughter go because she's 99.
The lines are real, by the way. No, you're not imagining.
Okay. So he's going to actually, he knows that he, he doesn't belong in this space station thing. It's fake anyway. So what is he gonna do? The only one he knows in the world, actually, is Amelia.
Universe.
Well, yeah. So he is going to go in and be with her, right? Theoretically?
Yeah.
And through time dilation, actually, he can end up getting to her in a time where maybe it won't have been so long, right?
No idea. Depends on where that planet is in relation to Gargantua.
So, but isn't going through the wormhole already a time dilation factor or not?
No.
It's the black hole thing. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Now, the Einstein-Rosenberg loop or whatever it is, it's just a tunnel.
Yeah. Space folded in on each other.
And so, and of course, the idea behind that is that the wormhole is a creation.
Yes.
Like, someone has to create this. This is not a naturally occurring phenomena.
Yes.
But we just sort of yada yada how they would create this. It's already been solved before this movie starts.
The future.
They don't know.
Oh, because it's the aliens that created it.
Yeah, that's what Professor Brand said in the very beginning. They don't know.
So this whole movie is built on lies. Lies, lies, lies. Lies and science.
Lies from Alfred.
Lies from Alfred. Murph thinks that Coop is lying. I don't know. So again, I didn't like the Tesseract thing. I just don't like it. I don't buy it. I don't, maybe because I don't understand it.
Well, it was kind of the MacGuffin.
It was Deus Ex Machina, but not really, because they try to, they set the seeds all along, right? So you're saying in future viewings, well, with time being what it is, future viewings may increase my knowledge or my experience of the past viewing.
I really do believe at a watch in the second round, you will get a lot more of the story because you already get the moving parts, and so then the background becomes more into the foreground. Does that sound right, Drew? To you?
I don't know. I want to watch it again to find out.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. I've only seen it once. I really do believe that you get more out of it.
Okay, so once you watch the movie, you can just fast forward through the space travel part of it?
Oh, I imagine parts of it.
Parts of it.
So you wouldn't recommend fast forwarding through 20 or 30 minutes of stuff at a time?
I think you could probably skip the whole Matt Damon stuff. You could skip all of that.
Except that you can't because it's all interwoven with what's going on back at Earth.
Yeah. That's the problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this was almost 3-hour movie.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that.
And amazingly, our parents were both awake for it.
More than once.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about the first time.
Anyway, any other notes on Interstellar?
I like it even more after chatting about it.
I think I'm more irritated about it after. It was a fine movie. I mean, I'll just skip to my things. It was a fine movie, but it ultimately was not pleasant for me to watch. I think it wasn't Take Shelter unpleasant. It wasn't an active assault on me during a very bad time. I guess, well, very is a strong word, during an emotional time in my life, apparently. But I don't know.
I mean, any time you get a movie where somebody goes into a black hole and they show you what happens, it's going to be, you know, fantastic and a lot of artistic license.
Of course, yes. Yeah, which is fine.
Yeah, so, you know, that whole thing didn't bother me. You know, the Tesseract thing didn't bother me. I mean, that's the fiction heavy part of a science fiction movie that has a black hole. And you knew it was coming. And as soon as you find out there's a black hole, you know somebody's going in it and you're going to see something wild.
I didn't. I mean, I guess I should have guessed, but I didn't. I was just letting this 3-hour movie take me along.
Here's one of the questions that I had from this, which I don't know if it was ever addressed, but I didn't find it. So they're making plans to leave and colonize another world potentially. How are they sure the blight won't follow them?
I don't know. That part's never addressed.
I mean, because they don't know what causes it. They can't kill it. I mean, they said, you know, the nitrogen, something about the nitrogen. It feeds on nitrogen. But mm-hmm. there was, like, okay, you still have to have nitrogen in your atmosphere to breathe, because otherwise, if you have a high oxygen atmosphere, it just sets itself on fire. So, well,
yeah,
it gets
you can
set
actually,
on fire.
I think if you have too much oxygen, you will die too, right?
Yeah, it's hard on your body.
Like, you can't actually live on 100% oxygen.
You can't?
No, I think there's like a thing where you can get like oxygen poisoning.
Loving dead people is evidence of an artifact of some force in the universe. I thought that was kind of interesting and profound.
Loving dead people?
Oh, yeah. Loving dead people. Yeah, love also. No. There's one force stronger than a black hole, and that's love. Okay, nah, bullshit.
Matt Damon is such a weasel coward in this movie. I like The Martian better. That's my other note.
I've never seen The Martian.
Oh, it's a great movie.
But I like Matt Damon in this movie. Don't get me wrong. He's a great
movie. No, he's great, but he's such a little... So I also, this was the other thing. How does Cooper think he can change the past since he's already lived through it and he can't go backwards? So I guess that's part of the time part of the dimensions.
Well, he's not changing the past, right? Because he'd already done it in the movie chronology.
I did see quantum data through the dimensional transfer on a watch seemed like it would have taken him quite a long time.
Yeah, good thing he could travel a long time.
Okay, too much oxygen can actually lead to free radicals.
Yeah, in the that would be bad.
Which would be very bad. They've tested it on mice because the air has about 21% oxygen. And usually when you do treatment for oxygen deprivation, you give just slightly more than that. But you never give more than 60%. And if you try to give them much more than that, it causes more brain damage and cerebral palsy-like coordination problems than just regular air. So, don't do it, people. Don't try to ride that oxygen high.
Anyway, that's all my notes.
So, Brother Jay, how would you score this movie? How would you judge a movie?
This is an A movie, as far as I'm concerned. It's got great visuals. It's got a compelling story. It, even though it was long, it still kept moving pretty briskly. There was plenty of action. There wasn't a lot of slow time. And I was interested enough now to have watched it a third time, and I would watch it again.
It was way more action-packed than 2001.
Absolutely.
Show. And granted, 2001 was made during a time where all of the visuals were new. 2001 was the Star Trek 1 of space movies.
The visuals in this movie were pretty great. A lot of that black hole stuff I had never seen before.
No. So, Brother Drew, was it worth it?
Absolutely. I'm going to watch this again. It's going to be worth it again.
Would you be interested in a... By the way, no one is suggesting this except me. Would you be interested in seeing a sequel where Cooper goes and meets up with Amelia? And
no.
Maybe there's some shenanigans happening. Not shenanigans, sorry. Maybe there's some sort of desperate situation that he encounters and then there's a...
Nope.
I'd watch that, though. If nothing else, just because I'm a completionist.
Ah, okay.
No, I think when Murph dies, that's the end of the story.
Because really, what we find out that it's, even though the main character is Cooper, Murph is the hero of the story.
Mm-hmm.
The reluctant hero. The hero's journey is taken by Murph.
She really saves herself.
Not by Cooper. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I found this, again, I found it a little bit troubling. Like I said, it wasn't very satisfying for me to watch it. I'm glad we got to talk about it. I don't feel the need to watch it again.
But you will.
I might. I don't know. I mean, you know, Matthew McConaughey and Matt Damon and Jessica Chastain, they're all compelling actors. And Michael Caine and, I mean, and John Lithgow. I mean, this is a sure thing. I'll always watch all these actors in anything they do.
And they all do a great job in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, there aren't any bad performances, really. Not that I can think of.
Did Anne Hathaway continue her streak for you of you liking her even if you didn't want to?
Yeah, I think so. I don't like her hair. but I got over it because she's a good actress. And turns out the shallow things like her haircut is not really important to the story. Turns out she was not even, she was not a love interest. There was no romance in this story, except maybe nope. future romance, maybe. But again, time is involved, so there's, I don't know, the gravity of love.
Okay, Celine Dion.
Yeah, no, it's how many ounces? 21 ounces, something? No, 21 grams? How much is, what's the weight of the soul?
I don't know. S-O-L or S-O-U-L?
S-O-U-L.
Oh. I think it matters how dark and twisted you are.
No, you know what I'm talking about, right?
I have no clue what you're talking about. There's a movie
called it.
There is a movie called 21 Grams.
Okay.
It's not a cocaine movie, right?
No. Okay, so the 21 Grams experiment refers to a scientific study published in 1907 by Duncan McDougall. Ooh, that's a, like, Dougie's cousin, a physician from Haverhill, Massachusetts. McDougall hypothesized that souls have a physical weight and attempted to measure the mass lost by a human when the soul departed the body. So he weighed people before and after the moment of death.
Hmm. Huh. Yeah.
That seems, seems legit.
It was widely regarded as flawed and unscientific due to the small sample size, because...
You don't
really.
Say.
Also, it's been cited as an example of selective reporting. But people latched onto the idea that the soul weighs 21 grams. Isn't the movie... There's a movie called Smoke with Harvey Keitel.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's a little line in there that talks about... I don't know, it's a Walter Raleigh or somebody who measured the weight of smoke. Like the idea
Francis
is,
Drake?
Maybe Francis Drake, yeah. Where, like, they took a cigar and they weighed it before and after it was smoked and they... determine that the difference.
One of the things I like about the whole love discussion in Interstellar was it was completely sleight of hand, right? It was setting up that love was going to be the force that allowed Matthew McConaughey to communicate with his daughter in the past, when then it just turned out, nope, fifth dimensional beings.
So, love was the reveal, but fifth-dimensional beings were the prestige.
Yep. No, nice.
No. Nah. That doesn't work. Doesn't hold water. Sorry.
Okay. Love would be more of the setup.
Yeah, I think you're right. So, well, actually, and the reveal isn't the middle one. What's the setup, and then...
The turn?
The turn, yes. And then the prestige. Okay. Even the simplest things I can't keep track of. That's, telling you, gotta go back to my okra farm. Do you guys like okra?
No.
Like fried okra? Fried okra is something beautiful. My wife.
I don't like it in any form.
I don't think I've had fried okra.
Okra is a weird, slimy, nasty vegetable that kind of provides its own thickener if you add it to something like gumbo. So that's why
it works as a thickener if you add it in the right way.
So, I mean, again, like gumbo, I think is what, like okra is known for mainly in our family, but there's something beautiful about fried okra though, because it like gives you like the little okra seeds give you a little pop when you bite into it. So if you manage to find a Popeye's chicken, you can order yourself some fried okra and, you know, you can dip it in either, a plain ketchup would be fine, or even a remoulade of some kind. I recommend fried okra. If you're going to eat something fried, skip the green tomatoes, go right for the okra. Then make it a satisfying pop in your mouth when you eat it. So, anything else before housekeeping?
Housekeeping. I will say that it's been a nice vacation so far. I don't even know. I think I am somewhere upwards of 1,000 emails in my work email inbox. I just watch the numbers grow. So that'll be fun. We spent some time at the cabin, which was great. Luckily, there was no damage from anything, from the earthquake, which is amazing. The most impressive thing was that some glass bottles that were decorative up on this window on the upper giant arched top of their the wall at the which would be a second story if there were a floor at the second story. That just all that stayed up there just fine. None of that moved, which is
crazy.
Something. The only real casualty appears to be the well. The well. The well works, so there's no problem with the well. But whatever has occurred has stirred up the water table. So there's something in the water, whether it's sediment or rock debris or something. So they have to have the water tested and...
mean old nasty liquefaction, right?
Yeah. But as I pointed out to Dad, since they're buying the final other piece of property, which is what the original couple, 2 years they had, they were using the other well, which was not theirs. Once they buy the rest of the property, that second well, which was their primary well to begin with, becomes theirs again. So if nothing else, they can try and tie back into that system if they have to. It would be probably cheaper than trying to re-drill and re-bore the well they have, because that was cost prohibitive.
Yeah, but probably it's in the same water table, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, whatever's going on in one well.
Well, I don't know, because they were in very, very different locations. So it's possible, I guess, but it could be a matter of what could be disrupted might be in between the bedrock and the water table. So it could be anywhere in between, because the original first well was not as, it didn't take them as much. It wasn't as, the well wasn't as deep where the first one was. So maybe the same water table, but it may not be the water table that's the issue. It may be stuff in between. So stuff may have shifted, and that's so.
Guys have to like not drink the water?
We used it for like bathing, but we drank bottled water. I mean, Dad's got a super expensive giant filtration system, but he said, we just assume not change the filter until we know what it is, because it would just gum up the filter again. And they're pretty expensive, I guess. He only changes them about once a year if he can. So. That's the thing. But, again, we had bottled water. It was fine. We bathed in it. It didn't kill us. I didn't grow scales. My fingernails and hair didn't fall out yet. So
did he bring back a sample, or do you have to have somebody collect a sample?
No, we have a sample.
Oh,
we brought back a sample. So
does it look gunky? Is that what's going on?
It looks white, cloudy. It's not clear. Right.
So it's turbid.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hopefully that's just aesthetic.
Yeah, probably. It didn't taste funny, but that's not reliable, because I'm sure lots of minerals that will kill me don't taste like anything either, or I can't taste them. So that was the only real thing. Amazing that everything else seemingly was fine.
Hey, and you guys got a white Christmas. Did Jesse get to get out in the snow and play?
We actually went hiking. We went down to Six Mile Creek, which was kind of impressive.
Like snowshoe, or is there snow that deep enough?
It turns out the snow was deep enough we could have snowshoed, but we opted not to because there wasn't a lot of snow. It wasn't super deep at the cabin crossing the highway. Once we were down in the lower elevation, there was tons of snow, and we were like, well, we probably could have snowshoed, but it was fine. But the creek is surprisingly not frozen for the most part, which is not typical, I'm told. So that was interesting. Had dinner with one of their friends, who's a really colorful guy who's kind of hilarious. So that was kind of fun. And then we had a fun, harrowing drive back. Because it was
I texted you guys because we were getting I was at work and I was getting reports of a whiteout on the highway, and I didn't remember when you guys were even what day you were coming back. And when I texted, I said, "Hey, when are you guys coming back?" And Jason's like, 10 minutes."
Oh, yeah.
Well,
we talked about it and we said, "Well, we'll drive, and if it's bad, we'll turn around because it could be by the time we get there, the conditions could be clear."
Oh yeah,
and so. So we and Mom and Dad both said the worst part will be getting out of the Hope Road onto the highway, because the highway at least is traveled, and the Hope Road was awful. It was indeed awful. But once we were on the highway, no problems really. it got pretty sketchy for a little stretch, but not until Potter Marsh.
It's funny.
When a big giant truck drove by and it obscured everything with that fine misty snow. But we didn't have any other problems. I mean, it was slick in spots, but I had it in four-wheel drive. It's a giant tank. Even with the cracked windshield, it's fine.
Did you guys caravan up?
We drove two vehicles. We drove both expeditions because we had to take
Dad's bring a big screen TV to the cabin.
Yeah, how'd that go? Did you guys get that switched out?
Yep, we did. Yeah. Other than that, we're just getting ready for Christmas. And, they wanted to take us out to, Mom and Dad wanted to take us out to dinner to Double Muskie. But we were like, yeah, there's avalanche danger today. So we're going to opt not to. As much as we appreciate the gesture, so.
Yeah, their place is a lot closer you can go to and have a nice meal.
Yeah, and we did, so.
Excellent.
And that aren't cursed.
Is Double Muskie cursed?
The last two times I ate there, I suffered some personal tragedies. One time, we came home to find our cat on the verge of death.
Oh.
And the very next time we ate there, it turns out our tenants were in the process of burning down our house.
Oh.
I'm not laughing at the fire.
So that's some negative reinforcement.
Yeah. Haven't been back since. Now that we have children, we don't want to risk it.
Exactly. Yeah. Kelly doesn't like it because the only time she went there, she had like gumbo because it's supposed to be like renowned for its Cajun food or whatever. And she didn't like it at all. Like, I know what gumbo tastes like. This was not it. So, anyway.
Which is funny because no, it's not the gumbo. It's the jambalaya that Mom and Dad rave about, which I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole.
Jambalaya, I don't know. One of the two. Though people love it. I only eaten there once, and I had a great steak. But it's a great steak. Drew, any housekeeping? Do you have any medical updates? Because I have one.
No, I'm no updates there. Well, now I'm worried. I can't give medical updates while Jess is up here because somebody might actually ask me about it out of the blue and I won't be prepared.
Well, this won't come out till after, so.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
No, that's not fair to him. Status quo for now.
Sweet. Okay, so I have a medical update. I don't know. Did we ever talk about the guinea pigs on the pod?
Off and on briefly.
Okay, so I'll give a
you mentioned it. I don't know if it made it into the what aired.
Okay, well, so I'll give a brief introduction. So 2 years ago, my wife adopted two guinea pigs from animal control. They cost $5 a piece, and we had to sign a piece of paper saying we would not use them for sport or food.
like for a snake.
Yes. Because people eat guinea pigs too. So,
ew, really?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
More dark meat than a hamster.
They're bigger than a hamster. A hamster is like a little bigger than a mouse. A guinea pig is substantial. Anyway, I didn't know this until we got them either. So, after about 6 months, I think, now maybe a year, one of the pair died. It's very sad, but, you know, this has happened. End of life cycle, whatever. But because guinea pigs are live in communities or whatever, they're social animals. So I think in Sweden you're not even allowed to legally own one guinea pig. You have to have more than one because it's cruel. So we went to the pet store because they didn't have any available at animal control. So we got the $23 pig to replace the $5 pig. So we have one $5 pig, one $23 pig. The older one and the new one. The older one's name is Kuka. The younger one's name is Cutie. About a month ago, I want to say, we were cleaning out the cage. Cleaning out the cage, which involves moving both pigs to one side of this divided cage and cleaning out one side, then move to the other side of the cage. And when I picked up the little hutch that they sleep in, Kuka, the old $5, the old broad of the pigs, who's sort of antisocial, kind of bullies the younger one, and is almost assuredly blind. I picked her up, and she
is the reason you're referring to her by her price foreshadowing?
Yes.
Okay.
So So, because I never referred to her as the $5 pig before this last month. But so I picked up the pig and it was like, oh my God, there's a gigantic cyst or abscess or something. There is a growth on one of her cheeks. The side of her face was a gigantic. And it was hardish. It wasn't like super hard, but it wasn't like squishy. And she certainly didn't.
You squeezed it to find out?
Kind of. Yeah. You know, let me give it a little squeeze.
What if it would have exploded in a gross, greasy mass?
You know what? Turns out expressing those kind of things is probably a good sign. The fact that it was like fairly hard was, we're thinking, oh no. But it came on too fast, we're thinking, to be a tumor. Now, I'm not a veterinarian or much of a scientist or engineer, but we figured, okay, so it's not a tumor because it came on really fast. So it's probably an abscess, like a broken tooth or something. So Kelly took the pig to the vet that we have that will see pigs, because the guinea pigs, because not every vet will. So she goes and has to get she has to show up first for an appointment, like on a Saturday. And she gets there and I try to tell her, because the idea is we don't want this pig to suffer. It would be horrible for the pig to suffer. We don't want her in any pain, but I wanted to gently remind my wife that this pig cost $5 and seems like it would be unreasonable to spend a lot of money on surgery for a pig who is probably already at the end of her life cycle, because pigs, guinea pigs last 5 years, 6 years, something. And this one has to be at least 4 years old. This line of discussion doesn't really go over well in my house, because my wife is an animal lover. So like, okay, just, I threw it out once, then I let it go, whatever. So she takes her to the vet. The vet like pulls a bunch of gunk out. So actually it was something they could take out. Said, yeah, it's an abscess, could be a broken tooth. But we don't really do like dental surgery on guinea pigs, but what we'll do is we took a bunch of gunk out of it. We give it some antibiotics and some pain stuff that's administered, orally. So we have these little syringes for oral meds for the pig. And so that was fine. Cost us about $100. So now we have a $105 pig. And after another week, it's just growing back. I mean, whatever's filling up this thing is just getting bigger and bigger. And she's eating. And they had her take her off of like the guinea pig chow. And instead, she eats mostly, the guinea pigs mostly eat hay. So take her off of all the pellet food. Give her only hay and then some fresh vegetables. And she didn't seem to be in any pain and was eating and drinking, so that was a good sign. But I figured this pig's days were numbered. We figured just one morning we'd find her dead and whatever. But now we have two cages because we had to separate the pigs. So, and who maintains the cages? That would be Eric. So,
of course.
Yeah. So it grew back. So the next week was Black Friday. So Journey and I take the pig to Pet Emergency to see if there's something they can do, at least to drain it or whatever. And we waited like an hour and a half to see the vet. And the vet looked at the pig and said, you know, she's not in any pain, because guinea pigs will tell you. And the vet told us a really cool story about how a guinea pig saved her mom's life because they had guinea pigs growing up and her mom fell asleep with a lit cigarette and set the house on fire. But the screaming of the guinea pigs woke her up and she was able to get out of the house. Anyway.
Were the guinea pigs burning?
No.
Okay.
No, they were just alarmed. Because guinea pigs do make noise. They can make noise if they're excited or whatever. And apparently they make noise if they're hurting. So we didn't hear any of that. That was fine. So I had a conversation, because Kelly was not there. Kelly was at work. I had the conversation with the vet at the Pet Emergency, being like, okay, so we don't want her to be in pain. And the vet there is like, yeah, we don't do surgery on guinea pigs. And even people who would, guinea pig teeth apparently go right up to the brain and stuff. So it's kind of a delicate thing. And it seems like more trouble than it's worth. In fact, one of the things they could do, she said, it may not even be a cracked tooth. It may just be like a piece of hay got caught in her cheek and a big abscess from that. She's like, they could like actually like surgically scrape out all of the abscess itself, and that way they could culture it and see if more different antibiotics would be better. I said, okay, so would also a reasonable course of treatment be to doing nothing since she's not in pain? And they're like, oh yeah, that'd be a plenty good piece of, you know, course of action. So I'm like, sold. And then they were kind enough not to charge us anything. So we still have $105 pig. So we take that back, and but we still, she still has this gigantic thing on the side of her cheek. And we're still giving her antibiotics because we still have another week of antibiotics to give her. And so Kelly calls the original vet and says, it's not going away. What, you know, what do you recommend? And they said, well, here's some different antibiotics. And so I think at that point, it may have, we may have a $205 pig. I can't really remember that part of it. But that's not the exciting part of the story. The exciting part of the story came last Friday, the day after our podcast we recorded with Jesse, where we are, we have a morning and night routine of giving her antibiotics. So we have to do it together because one of us has to hold the pig and the other one has to coax her to drink this stuff, or at least shove the syringe into her mouth and squirt. And I have this, it's a Milanese mesh watch band that turns out if you put liquid antibiotics in, it's hard to clean. So I have now a whole technique for holding the pig. Anyway, so as we're getting ready to give the pig the antibiotics, we look down in the cage and we see this thing the size of a quarter, maybe, and a 25-cent piece, and or maybe like a pound coin in the UK. And it's got hair on it. And we're thinking, well, maybe it's just like something that looks like it's hair and it's just like a piece of something. Because by that time we had reintroduced some of the hard food. And no, picked it up. And turns out this guinea pig is an Anderson through and through. The guinea pig did surgery on herself. She removed the cyst from her cheek. It looks like a troll doll, the head of the troll doll being like a cyst, like a fatty tumor looking thing, and then she has a hole in the side of her cheek, the shape of the olive sized piece of thing that was that she, but there wasn't blood in the cage or anything. There's a little blood on the cyst or whatever, and we don't know how she did. She just claw it all the way around. I mean, it's weird. And there's, like, it has, like, again, the troll doll hair of hair, because this is a hairy animal. So, since then, it's been almost a week, we have been putting topical antibiotics in the little hole, and the hole is closing up, and she's happy as a clam, and she's a survivor.
This is what you sent us a picture of?
Yes, so I sent you guys a text saying, hey, this weird thing happened. But I don't want to send you the picture unless you want to see the picture because it could be a little gross. And immediately Drew's like, send the picture. I did not realize what was going to happen next. I sent Drew the picture and not realizing that Drew was immediately going to walk down the hall and show the picture to our father.
Who loves this kind of stuff.
Yes, yes. I think the title of my autobiography, one of the working titles is My Father Was Never the Tooth Fairy. Because like teeth, like little kid baby teeth or the results of baby teeth would creep Father Anderson out.
Mm-hmm.
Screaming.
Still do.
Yeah.
Oh no, we would just have to chase him with the tooth and he would just throw $20 bills at us. Get away.
So how did our father react to the sight of the cyst with hair?
He wanted to know what's wrong with his youngest son who thought that he would want to see that.
It was not as satisfying as you would expect.
Will it be satisfying if I bring the plastic bag that still has it in there?
Oh, yes, it will.
I think that will end in a different Christmas tradition that you don't wish to start.
You know, it is stocking stuffer sized.
It really is. No, I went down and I showed him the picture, and I didn't tell him what it was. I was like, take a look at this. He's looking at it, and, you know, he's getting his glasses on. He's really trying to figure it out, because it looks kind of like...
looks like a
porn. You're a distance, bastard.
It looks like a big acorn.
Yeah. Yep, with hair.
Yeah, so the top is hair.
Were you raised so he's by looking wolves? At
it, he's like getting it, he's getting like really close to his face. He's like, what is that? And I told him what he is, and he was not thrilled. He immediately changed the subject and started showing me pictures of his chassis.
The Starliner. The Starliner chassis. Chassis.
The son that he loves the most.
Anyway. Which we visited again today, by the way.
Oh, and?
The sway bar and fuel line that I U.S. mailed to Anchorage from Portland arrived finally.
Oh, because it's not the right size.
Oh no, it's perfectly fine. It's just that being in Alaska, which is another country apparently to anybody who is a shipping company, also see lithium ion batteries. You can't ship things normally like you could. And this was big enough that UPS and FedEx wanted like $500 to ship it because it's an oddly large size. It's not particularly heavy, but it's super bulky because the tubing can't really be bent and compact because it's fuel line. It runs the length of the car. And it's really not meant to be overly manipulated. At any rate, used to be you could go to like Alaska Airlines and you could gold streak things. You set up an account, no big deal. However, now, with regulations the way they are, if you wish to ship anywhere, with the exception of intra-Alaska, Alaska has an exemption only for itself, you have to become a known shipper. To become a known shipper, you have to get certified by the FAA, which means the FAA has to come and visit your site. In my case, they would have had to come and visit my house, which means and it's a $150 fee annually. So I asked, well, my garage, my property, anything they want to see, they have access to. Like, so I'm paying $150 extra dollars to then turn around and pay to ship something. So it ended up not being cost effective and we just went to USPS. But regardless, that finally arrived because it came slow boat because we just mailed it normal. So we took it into the shop, which is the third time we've been to the shop since I've been here now.
Of course it is.
And
have you seen incremental change or is it just mm-hmm. pretty much the same thing?
I got more pictures today. Oh. The frame was sandblasted clean. The chassis frame has been sandblasted clean and it looks in amazingly great shape.
Oh, good.
So no more
beehives and stuff in there?
Nah. We recrated the new engine, met the transport company, got it on a truck, and I have the new engine transported to the restoration company. So Dad no longer has to have the U-Haul space. So
it's now, I mean, and this is an engine that is bigger than stock engine.
Yes.
This is going to be a real pussy wagon.
Dad was giving the history that it was actually a test engine that some magazine had crafted specifically to have it put it on a dynamometer and have it tested against a Ford Mustang engine to see which had the better output. So it's actually been a full working engine before. So that'll be interesting.
Sweet.
So at any rate, I'll have more pictures. The guys who run the shop are pretty awesome. They have been childhood friends. They went to Polaris together, of all things. So
the theater?
The school? Sorry.
No, yeah, I know. Yeah. It used to be a movie theater.
I know.
So they're young.
Yeah.
Yes. But no, they clearly are super interested. Every time we go, they're super... Every time Dad brings car parts, they're super interested. They really wanted to see the engine, so they actually opened the crate while we were there when they delivered it yesterday. So,
awesome.
So they're good guys. They really like what they're doing. So that's good for Dad. Certainly, it makes him feel better about having somebody else do some of the work or most of the work. So we're just looking forward to Christmas and having the whole family together. And I made mini cheesecake bites today, so.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe rambling. That's the brother Sanderson, so sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Aaron, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Okay.